So welcome everybody to the ongoing class in meditation. This is the class we have every Saturday afternoon from 3 to 4:15, sometimes a bit longer, sometimes only a tiny bit longer. But nevertheless, this is for those who regularly been practicing meditation. They know the basics, and this is where we take it to a deeper level. In the room to my right, we have the introduction to meditation class. This is a group of 4 lessons where people learn the very basics, and from there they can take it deeper afterwards. There they do shorter meditation times. Here we usually do a meditation of about 40 minutes, because when it gets a little bit longer, you find you can go more still. Things settle down more, they get more calm. But for some people that would be too difficult. Fortunately, here we have our beautiful chairs. And these chairs, we don't use them for anything else except listening to Dhamma, listening to instructions, or doing the meditation. So these chairs are being soaked up with incredible, beautiful, peaceful energy. So it should be really easy for you to sit here and just really bliss out to the max. It should be, but sometimes it's not. Because it's not, that's why I have to give instructions. But what I do here is try and start off with giving some basic ideas about meditation, and then let you sort of... I give the guidance for the first 15 or 20 minutes, then I'm quiet, you're quiet, I hope. And we see how we go. For sometimes when you first start meditating, you don't maybe have too much experience yet, but after a while, just you learn how to, it's not like you learn, it's like the mind knows what to do. I don't know how many of you, when you drive a car, sometimes it becomes automatic, especially the ones where you have the gear sticks you have to change. Sometimes you don't really think about changing the gears. It's just an automatic process because you've been driving for such a long time. That's what it's like when you meditate sometimes. It becomes like an automatic process. You're sitting there, you're becoming more and more still, more and more peaceful. You don't even need to think about what you're doing. It just, the mind knows automatically. It's done it so many times. It's just like you're playing a tennis match. And you trained how to play that tennis match or play tennis, and then when the ball comes towards you, you don't think, should I do a backhand, should I do a forehand, should I slice it, should I do it this way or that way. You haven't got time really to think, and you don't need to think. You just return it. It becomes like an automatic process. And that's exactly what happens with the meditation. When you get started, you have to let go of all that stuff in the past and the future. All the stuff which kind of consumes you when you come in here. And then once you let that go, then you can be in this moment. And then you start thinking, what should I do next? You go into the future. We learn how to let go of both of those things. So the only thing you need to be aware of is what's happening right now in this moment. First of all, it makes things so much more simple just to be here right now with whatever is going on. And just don't have any idea of what you should be doing next. It's all what you're doing now. That's the only thing we have to be aware of. We don't do this because we force ourselves to be aware in this moment. It becomes just a natural abiding. It's just, I don't know if you ever just... A good example, many of you have, say, been to the beach, a nice quiet piece of shoreline somewhere, and you're just sitting down in the afternoon. It's not hot, it's not cold, you're not hungry, you've got nothing much to do that afternoon. And all you do is just sit there and just watch the waves gently come in. And then they come up the shore, and then they gently go down again. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to tell the waves to come in or tell the waves to go back again. It's nature. All you do, be this observer. And I've often given that as a simile to when you're watching, say, the breath, which is one of the objects you can use in meditation to observe. Just see the breath coming into your body. And it comes in as far as it can, and then it stops, and then it goes out again. This in and out breath, like the waves on the ocean coming in and going out. And because there's nothing you can do about it, all you do is to observe, to watch, to know. When I say observe, I don't mean you keep your eyes open. It's just that's a way of saying you know what's going on. You just know the breath as it comes in, and then you know the breath as it goes out. You don't force it, you don't make it happen. It always will happen. Slow or fast, deep or long, that's the lung's job to know how much breath it needs. What it does, it means that you can't control or get involved or do anything. You're just being this quiet observer in this moment. And that quiet observer in this moment where you can't do anything is a very helpful aspect of meditation. It means, you know, you can't have all these plans or feel bad it didn't happen the right way. Look, how many times if you're watching your breath, do you feel frustrated? My breath isn't going in. I keep wanting it to go in. It doesn't go in. Of course it eventually goes in. You know, you can't not breathe. Well, if you can't not breathe, I think we're going to call the ambulance for you. But, you know, breath is something natural. You just sit there, be quiet and watch and see what happens. That type of attitude when you're observing, being here, but not controlling, not getting negative, and not even aspiring for anything. That's one of the reasons why I remember the times when I tried to find places of nature and just sit down there and just watch the clouds, you know, flow through the sky at night. Actually, during the daytime or afternoon probably. And as a monk, you just watch that. You can't control it. And it's not stimulating in the sense you're going to get all excited. It's not creating any negativity. It's just a nice way of allowing the mind to be peaceful, having something to watch in such a way that it doesn't disturb anybody. And when you're watching it like that, you do find that after a while, the mind becomes peaceful. It becomes peaceful because this thing behind you, most of it is like the doer, the reactor. You know, you react with wanting, you react with fear, you react with this is not good enough or it could be better. All that emotional reaction is just suppressed. I say it's suppressed, don't worry about that word suppression because this is stuff which is not really worth anything. You just sit there and just relax to the max. Just like when you just, you know, at night time, you can sit on your back in a nice quiet place. Sit on your back, I mean, sort of lay down on your back. And you just watch the stars in the sky. I mention that because I signed a couple of books for some people yesterday. And in one of those books, I had this one of my favorite photographs in the Meditation Retreat Center in Jhana Grove. Of this, we call it like a stupa, you know, it was offered by some Buddhists in Borobudur in Java. And very often, you know, if you're on a retreat and it's nice and quiet in night time, you can lay on the stone there, and just on your back, and it's warm because it's soaked up the sun during the day. And you can see the full Milky Way just, you know, in the sky above you. And it just moves so slowly. And you can lay down there and it's beautiful, it's gorgeous, and it's still. You know, well, it's not really still, but it's much more still than much of life. It's not like watching traffic. It's not just like watching people. In the quiet night, there's no sound of any wind. And you can just see those stars just slowly moving across the sky. Really slowly. And there's a sense of a beautiful appreciation of the peace of just watching something just so quiet and peaceful. And that's a kind of idea of what this meditation is allowing you to do, instead of just watching things which are important, which move fast, which mean you have to get involved and do something about them, otherwise someone will tell you off. Instead of that, we just allow ourselves just to see, to feel, to know, without judging any part of it. Just accepting this moment and realizing it doesn't matter what the quality of the moment is, it's the quality of the acceptance. That's what allows us to be peaceful, allows us just to experience this moment in a totally different way. Not with, is this right, is this wrong, am I supposed to do something else, am I doing this meditation correctly? Don't ever think like that. You're just here, being aware in this moment, making peace with this moment. And after a while, the way you experience this moment begins to change. You can appreciate it more. It's more peaceful, more beautiful. You can see it more deeply. It's amazing, even if it's just seeing the stars at night, sort of in our retreat center. I don't know, many of you know that before I was a monk, I was a theoretical physicist. It's many, many years ago now. And I used to look at stars at night in these great observatories over in Cambridge in UK. Remember, some of these were just like you'd see in some sci-fi movie, big domes. You can sit on this huge telescope and you can direct it to watch this part of the sky at night or other parts. Still remember, just on one evening, there was a clear sky and Saturn was clearly visible in the sky, and you see it like live in this, you know, huge amplification and see all its rings. When you see it live, it was gorgeous. Not a photo, but real. But anyhow, just seeing things like that allow you to be peaceful. You don't want anything, because what you experience is more than beautiful. And when you can experience not wanting anything, you find your mind, this knowing mechanism, becomes so quiet and peaceful. It's like it's satisfied. It's not searching around for something to enjoy. It's not like surfing through internet channels, finding something to do. You're totally happy, peaceful, just enjoying what you're experiencing right now. And that's what we do in this meditation. You know, we quieten our body down first of all. This is called bodily awareness, relaxation. It's a scanning through the body. And I will take you through that. And after being aware of the body for long enough and kind to it, it's not just mindfulness, it's a kindfulness. Just adding that bit of compassion, softness, appreciation, which is part of kindness, then you find that the body just relaxes. It's sometimes incredible to see how much you can relax your own body. And maybe an ache somewhere, a pain, an old wound somewhere, or for me, a little cough or a little cold in my nose. All of those things, after meditation, they tend to vanish, disappear. It's weird sometimes. But this is what happens when you can learn how to relax. And then what occurs all the time, I do this, you can feel the body just relax deeper than it's ever done before. It relaxes very, very beautifully, and it feels joyful. And I mention that to people because the joy is an important part of meditation. When you can experience that joy when you are just relaxing your body with your eyes closed, your relaxation goes to a deeper level. This is just body relaxation. After we've relaxed our body a lot, and it's comfortable, basically it just gives us no trouble for the rest of the meditation, usually. So then you can start to relax your own emotional world, your mind. And that's when we ask everybody to, how peaceful are you? This is just the way that I've developed over the years. If you have a better way, fine. But how peaceful are you? Because peace is an aspect of the mind. Once you can feel that peace inside of you, it is naturally delightful. It's nice to spend half an hour or more in this meditation just being peaceful. It has huge benefits. And I want you to find out what those benefits are. Not just in theory, but to experience them. When the peace starts to become really strong, you find it's a kind of an obvious thing that every time that you want something, every time you try and get rid of something, you destroy the peace. You've gone off into the future or the past. All wanting needs a destination in the future so that your desire has a place to land. And all ill will needs an experience in the past to keep it fed. And if you let go of that past and that future, you just really are in this moment. You find all that ill will, all those wanting desires, disappear for a while. It's like you're free. You're free to be. You're just here. And you carry on with this kindness to this moment, appreciating it. And it gets more and more soft, more and more peaceful, more and more beautiful. And this is actually where the meditation starts to take off. So anyway, that's just a quick overview of the meditation, because I usually only start talking about 15 minutes, and then we can go into the actual meditation itself. So it'll be about 40, 45 minutes of meditation period. And I will ring the gong at the end of the meditation when the time is up, but to start with, please make sure you're in a good meditation position, as best you possibly can get into. And keep your eyes closed. I was talking to you a lot before, so I just took a minute or two just to check my posture. I know that there's a few places which can very easily cause me disturbance in the meditation. One is just, that's weird, but it's my right toe. Sometimes it gets too squashed under my left knee. And the other thing is my butt. I have to make sure it's well positioned on top of my cushion. So those are things which I learned from experience. Put a little bit more attention on those two parts of my body. And if I need, which I think I'm going to try, I'll just move my posture slightly at the beginning. All the time I'm aware, because the awareness allows me to have the feedback. I can feel what's happening. I adjusted my robe a little. That feels good. This is the grosser, just general feeling of my bodily position. But now I go to a more refined awareness of my body. It's like a scan of my body. And I start with the furthest part from my head, which is my toes. And I started doing this ever since my teacher Ajahn Chah looked at me. I had so many cuts and bruises on my feet because of walking without shoes in the jungles. And he said that you Westerners are all the same. You have stupid feet. What he meant was our awareness was in our head, never in our body. So I developed more awareness of my feet. I do that at the beginning of the meditation. Toes, how are you? Just asking a simple question like that, which I do in ordinary conversation, but now to my own body. I'm connecting my awareness to my toes. And I know them very well after all these years. I know how they feel. And I know any danger signs. So that right toe was again squashed, so I adjusted it again. And when I do this awareness of my toes, I add the kindness in, the softness, the gentleness. Because that just adds this quality which allows the relaxation to become more deep, more effective. If I'm so kind to my toes, it's like tucking them into a warm bed. Just, you know, putting a nice duvet over them. Keep them nice and warm and comfortable and safe. And then what happens? They relax. Deeply relax. I move up from my toes to where the balls of the feet are. That front part just above the sole, above in the front of the sole. And I can feel that part of the feet, making sure they're all really relaxed. I know the feeling of relaxation, the feeling of tension. Doing this for long enough, and if there's any tension there, I have to adjust, because that tension will destroy the meditation later on. If I can't keep my own body quiet and peaceful, how am I going to keep my mind peaceful? And I go to the heel of my feet, heels. Experience those sensations and kind of loosen them. It's like that sometimes there's knots in your muscles. When you loosen those knots, the muscles kind of feel much better, more at ease. And then go to the tops of my feet, making sure they all feel relaxed and at ease. It's a nice thing to do. It's very pleasant to see just a small area of your own body, like the tops of your feet, all at ease, happy, with nothing irritating them at all. Then I can go past the heels of my feet to the ankles. If I'm going too fast, then go slower. If I'm going too slow, then go faster. This is not trying to force you. You never get relaxation through force. You get it through this softness of the mind. The kindness added to the mindfulness. I can feel even my ankles really relaxed. Often I say it's like, feels like, I'm not really doing this, but it feels like I'm just putting my 2 feet in this warm, fragrant water to give them a good soak. This morning, went on arms round, barefoot for an hour or so. And then at the end, they gave me the wash the feet with really nice warm water. And it felt wonderful. It allows the feet to relax. That's what I imagine now. So there's no tightness, there's no fear. I'm not withstanding any unpleasantness in my feet. I can totally let go in my feet. Allow them just to open up and sink into this, what to me is this little cushion I'm sitting on. For you, it may be on the carpeted floor of this hall. See how comfortable they can feel. But once they are comforted and feel safe, you can move up from the ankles to the calves. These are your own feet, your own legs. I can feel I don't know why, but the calves seem to be, my legs seem a bit tense. So I'll just stay with them for a while. Just, you know, to give them this sense of confidence that nothing can go wrong. And I can imagine just any tightness, any contraction in those legs opening out, being more and more and more relaxed. It's my own lower legs. They're doing that now. I can experience they feel so much more at ease than even 1 minute ago. I don't make this up, just describing how I'm feeling, hoping to take you along with me. And even my lower legs feel so at ease, as they too are soaking in this hot water, relaxing, having no force, pushing, pulling, contracting or stretching on them at all. And I go to my knees. The knees can be a place of a lot of tension and the aches and the pains caused by that tension. I've experienced plenty of that. So now I just get to know my two knees. It's like, how are you? We're not saying it to your fellow monk or people who you work with. You're saying it to your own body. Knees, I care for you. And you learn how to relax your own knees. Again, it's a strange thing, but I don't feel anything moving in my knees. But just saying, relax, it feels like inside channels are opening out. All sorts of stuff which flows through my knees can flow through easily. And there's no force on those knees. It's just like they are little knees floating in the air. No peace, no stress, no force. Just being. I know my problem is I keep on indulging too much. I don't know if that's too much, but I kind of enjoy being aware of my knees and they feel so at peace. And I go to my thighs, big muscles. They were quite tired this morning after the arms round. But they feel fine now. I kind of feel gratitude they're my age, they can still serve me just so well without any complaint. Feel them. Relax them. It's like I imagine them sinking into the cushion. They don't have to be tight, tense. They can be totally at ease, and it's a pleasant feeling. That's why it's easy to watch when it's a pleasant feeling, and it's very helpful for you. It's not a danger. It allows you to relax so deeply. And then at the top of my thighs, I get to my bottom, my buttocks. By this time, my awareness is getting quite strong. And the ability to be kind to these parts of my body, I've been building them up on these other parts, on legs and knees, and now to my butt. And you can relax the feelings in my bottom, buttocks bottom. And so it feels comfortable. And again, I say this every time, it's worth saying, that once that feelings in the buttocks are even on the cushion, I know that they will soon disappear totally. They don't change, it's the best I can do. And the brain doesn't register that feeling anymore. I can go up my body, up from the buttocks to the waist. And at this point, even though, I started off just adjusting my body what I thought would be the best position, even now I know that my waist needs to be adjusted, my movement. So I'm going to straighten up my back a bit more. And I get to this feeling of the back or the waist being just pulled in slightly at the back. It makes me feel so comfortable. And I know, this takes a bit of doing at this point, but then it'll mean I won't have to do anything for the rest of the meditation. It's the last kind of adjustment for my own back. And it feels so good. I've associated this with good meditation over many years. And then I go again to the bottom of my torso, and I just scan my attention up my body slowly. It's basically scanning up my intestinal tracts. I'm not quite sure what I'm watching, but I just scan upwards. And if I see any tightness, tension, anything out of the ordinary, I just pause there and relax it a bit more. Is that relaxation? It means, the whole body, just any indigestion or any tightness, irritation, tends to lessen. And my whole digestive system starts to feel so at ease. Until I finally just scan upwards to my tummy, to my stomach. When I get to my stomach, just check out how it feels. Give it kindness. And you learn how to relax it. The awareness allows you to have feedback. So you soon learn how to relax, and the feeling of relaxation. It's always very pleasant. And then I go up further from my stomach to my lungs. And I've had a cough, cold, I don't know what. And so my poor old lungs have been overworked the past week. So I have gratitude to them. When I'm aware of them, with kindness, everything becomes soft and easy. I'm not breathing out of fear or out of control or to get something. I'm just letting the lungs just, they know what to do. I'm just supporting them with kindness and awareness. And I move up from the lungs to the heart region. And feel the heart beating really softly. I am actually relaxed. I just wish it well. And then from the lungs, the heart, then I get up to the top of the torso, which is my shoulders. And there I must always make sure that they're relaxed as much as possible, because if I keep meditating for long periods of time with tension in my shoulders, that creates an ache and a pain which is very disturbing to the peace required for deep meditation. So I'm aware of my shoulders, but the tightness just where the shoulders and the neck meet, I just focus on that. It's just me, you don't have to do this. And I wish it well. Relax. And if somebody asks you to relax and they're kind, you trust them. Sometimes you can do that. And that's just what my shoulders just did. They know me, I've got no ill will towards them. I'm not ordering them around. Just suggesting, please, stop holding things tightly. My shoulders just start to relax amazingly. It feels good. Allow my attention to go from my shoulders down my arms. I don't have many problems with my arms, but nevertheless, I don't pass by them too quickly. I allow scanning that attention down to the elbows. They feel fine. If you've got some injury there, just do the best you can. Be kind to them. I found it quite, first time I did these things, I thought it amazing. You can be kind to your own body. And the body reacts beautifully. And pass my elbows down to my forearms. And relax, it gets more at ease as my attention passes by. It's not like a military parade where everybody's stiff and on guard and afraid of having the wrong posture. It's just you're kind to everything. You get to my wrists. They've been injured many times, falling off motorbikes, off ladders, playing sports when I was young. And I can feel those wrists on both hands. That's what I'm aware of in this moment. Those two wrists are at ease. And then I go past the wrists to the hands. And now I ask my fingers, how are you? I make sure that my fingers are in the best position. And this afternoon I just move them slightly. I just got into the habit of having the two thumbs just slightly touching and the right fingers on top of the left fingers. And my whole arms feel almost perfectly positioned. I go up to my shoulders again. And I go to my neck. And often I just move the head back and forth, forward and back, because I need to have my head well balanced on top of the neck. And also today, because I just did a little cough, there's an irritation there still, the final remnants of the cold which I'd had. So I give kindness, care to my throat. It's done an excellent job. Now my throat threw a tantrum. It's allowed. It's allowed to. It's at peace again. So I move up to my face. Relaxing the muscles around my eyes and my nose and my mouth. once my whole body is now relaxed. Just calmed my throat down. I try to experience the whole body. United, one thing. It does feel delightful. Allows me to relax even more. Then I move to my mind. I ask myself, how peaceful are you? And I can feel that peace. To me, it's something like the heat in the room or the cold in the room. Sometimes feels like the wind passing by my face. It's a quality which I've got to know very well. Peace in my own mind. The more peaceful I can feel, the less I want. The less business I have. Contentment. Peace. It's part of freedom. Freedom has nothing to do with wanting. Freedom means with all that wanting, ill will, striving, vanishes for a while. I become silent. For those who take this meditation even deeper, things like the breathing, that will come by itself now. Sometimes you're just in this moment, peaceful, silent, and you just notice that what you're aware of is your in-breath and out-breath. It's a natural experience, not a planned or a strived-for experience. You're just aware right now, kind and peaceful. It's as if time vanishes, you're just in this moment. And enjoy.
just getting close to the end of the meditation now. How do you feel? What are you aware of in this moment? And how delightful is it? Can you experience freedom? Going to ring the gong 3 times. When the last ringing of the gong fades, that's when to come out from the meditation. Thank you. Okay. We have a number of questions even here and here too. See what we can do. From Germany, you said if things I want to let go of keep coming back in meditation, it's because I look for them. How can I avoid it and stay with my breath? I'm angry and sad, please help. One of the first things we need is if you're angry and sad, it's because you're still holding on to the past too much. Why be angry? Sometimes we're fighting the universe. You never win. Instead of trying to fight the universe, especially meditation, we learn how to make peace with the universe. When I had a little coughing fit, when I said, now I'm going to be aware of my breath, not my breath, say my throat, it was almost like an invitation for my throat to start coughing. But I never fought it. I let it be. I know the more I fight these irritations, the worse they get. You just let it be. You become this passive observer. And then just the body does its thing. And then it just quietens down by itself. It's the same with things of the past. They keep coming back in meditation. Why? After a while, the present moment, when it's accepted, you're kind to it, the present moment becomes so much more beautiful, and you realize it's so much more beneficial. You can stay with this moment and kind to it. You may have a little coughing fit, but you know it will disappear by itself soon. So you don't need to keep bringing up the past or the future. You learn how to reject those things, not to be interested in them. And if you get angry at the past, you're feeding it. It's so easy to get angry, so easy to feel a victim. So easy, like to feel that you deserve more. But that's all in the past or the future. We learn, especially through meditation, to let this past and future totally vanish. When you really do get into this moment, and you're kind to it, it's such a beautiful place to hang out. It's what I called, at the end of the meditation, freedom. Freedom is there for you. So don't get angry and upset and sad. Instead, be in this moment and just enjoy this moment, even if it's not perfect. I always used to say that over in Serpentine, in a Bodhinyana monastery, it was on a hillside. There's many places in that monastery and in Jhana Grove, you can go and see these incredible sunsets. But the best sunsets are when there's a bit of dust or smoke or a few clouds on the horizon. If the sky is perfectly clear, the sunsets are never as beautiful. So that's one of the reasons, just right now, I was talking to many people, having a cough or a cold, not feeling 100%, I enjoy it. Why? Weird. It's because it allows me to go deeper into letting go. And it, weird as it may sound, but it actually motivates my meditation to go even deeper. And I enjoy my meditation when I have a cough or a cold. Just an amazing things which you can do. At the moment, my cough is just non-existent. And my cold is kind of gone. It'll probably come back again later, but it amazes me what this body and mind can do when they're well trained. That's why I say why I enjoy it. So I don't get negative or angry or sad. Instead, I enjoy learning how to make peace with this nature, not needing to control it, and enjoy the feeling of freedom which comes as a result. Anyway, question 2. Is there a usefulness to give rise to urgency, like meditate like your hair is on fire? Is it useful to put a bit of effort on breathing at the start? If I just think of stillness and I get sleepy? That urgency, the way that I found a balance there, if you have urgency, you're wanting something. Okay, it means you're going to be able to sit more, but while you're sitting, there's a sense of tension there, of wanting. And you never feel that freedom where all the wanting and the ill will vanish for a while. That's one of the reasons why the urgency is there, to make sure, you know, for each one of you, you get to the Buddhist Society on a Saturday afternoon in time. Urgency to get here in time. And urgency to get and sit on your meditation cushion. That's as far as the urgency goes. Once you're on that meditation cushion, that's when you let go. You don't strive. Concepts of time, to see if you can allow them to vanish as soon as you possibly can. As soon as you can, just let them totally go, so soon doesn't even make any sense to you. Get into the timeless state. I often say that in meditation you can free yourself from the prison of time. Time is a prison. And it's nice just to have no even concept of what the time is, what the day is, the month, the year. I remember doing that once when I was in Thailand in the forest. I hadn't got a clue what day of the month it was. Didn't know. Even the year sometimes I got wrong. What changed me was coming here to Perth after 1 or 2 weeks. There's a poor gentleman had an epileptic fit, called ambulance, and the first thing they asked him, what day of the week is it? he didn't know. So they put him in the ambulance and took him to the hospital. If they'd have asked me, I'd have gone to the hospital too. I didn't know what day it was. So I decided I'd better learn a little bit about what day of the month it is. So, Ajahn, I often wake up in the middle of the night to a complex nimitta. I can't tell if this is good or a bad thing. How might I use this skillfully? What I would do, if it's a complex nimitta comes, when you wake up, I'd sit up on your bed, you know, if that's comfortable enough, and just keep your eyes closed, don't turn on any lights, and just be in the moment. See what happens. You know my practice. I trained myself over many years. If I see a complex nimitta, I always incline towards the most beautiful part of that nimitta. And then the most beautiful part of that most beautiful part. The best way of describing that is like zooming in. But I don't do the zooming in. It's just the tendency which you developed over these years. It's a natural inclination. And then you get to the most beautiful part of the most beautiful part, and it's very simple in such areas. But you don't decide to do that. If you try to give yourself instructions when you're aware of nimittas, a lot of time that's way too coarse and you destroy the process. Okay, so there was a question put on the list on a piece of paper here. This is very much a meditation question, a very deep question. It's about the first jhana. And please, if you think you're way, way, way too distant from jhana, never think that way, because sometimes these things just come up. And it's about the vitaka vichara in the first jhana, which you've heard me say before, it's like a wobble. And why does this wobble happen? It is simply because the bliss which you experience, a very single bliss, it's just not like, you know, I'm sitting here and watching the bliss, you know, at some sort of distance from me. You're right inside this. It's a single perception. It's not as me watching that. It's me and that is just combined. And what happens with that bliss, it's so powerful, so beautiful, of course you can cling on to it. There's a holding on to it. And that is just too coarse for it to be still. So what happens is you tend to feel yourself moving away from it. The kind of the bliss gets, you know, slightly distant from you, not much, but the bliss is just so attractive, you get pulled right back into it. So it's like a moving in and out. But it's so refined, it's not much. But the only time you can notice that is after you've emerged. Please don't be like these intellectuals who try to analyze things while you're right inside of them. That disturbs it. This is something which, you know, by the way, what I learned as a scientist. You know, you don't work out what this means until after the experiment is over and you've collected all your data. You don't have collected half the data and then try and figure out what it means. So that's the same with the meditation. You do those kind of analysis. What was that vitaka vichara? Was that a wobble? Was that first jhana or second jhana or not jhana at all? When you emerge. And your memory after these deep meditations is 100% accurate. This is something which I'd love people to experience. That once, you know, there's deep meditations occur, what we call the five hindrances have been abandoned temporarily, but they're not there, then your memory is perfect. You can just recall things. It's just like going back there. You know exactly what was happening. That is the time when you do any analysis and you get insights. Not when you're right in there, but as you emerge. And with what kind of attitude we should observe it? With no attitude. Just let it be. Let it happen. Just, you don't do anything. Here, you have to be so incredibly still. I would say, like, if you want to know anything, just with a selfless, no ownership, renunciation attitude, kindness attitude. These are not attainments, because there's no one to own these attainments. These are experiences. It's not that I have got jhana, I have done this, I have done that. That's totally alien to the Buddha's teachings. You're disappearing. You're not owning anything. You may try and give yourself a jhana 1 medal. There's nothing to pin it on. You're sort of empty, nothing there. So what type of attitude? Just enjoy. There's some questions which were not about meditation. Okay, this is a good question first though. I'm going to answer this one. Can someone reach Sotapanna, that's the stream winning, for those who are Lankans here, Sowan, without reaching jhana first? Often we discuss that as monks, and I say, I can't see how anybody could actually reach the fruit of being a stream winner without having experienced the jhana. It is often said the mind is a good servant but a bad master. I never said that. Besides the benefits of meditation, how do you steer your mind when navigating your day? You don't steer the mind. Who's going to do the steering? It's like this is a mind which inclines to do this or to do that. And even all the talks which I give, all the actions which I do, even just how I deal with something like a cold. That's not me doing that. Sometimes I look back and why did I do that? And it's, you can see the causes. It's like a lot of time it's teachers. I was really heavily conditioned by people like Ajahn Chah, Ajahn Tate, to even Ajahn Mahabua. So many of these peoples, but most of all by the Buddha. That's where all these attitudes come from. It's not the mind is a good servant but a bad master. The mind is just a phenomena, just a process. And the reason why I, for some really good fortune, learned how to have it trained was make sure it was exposed to some great monks and nuns and great sort of experiences. Because those are the experiences which basically condition my mind to be the way it is. I take no responsibility. All my talks, all the things which I do, all the trainings, that's all because of the people who have taught me over the years. It's them, not me. How do you reckon? Anyone want to say anything? Do you agree with me? If you don't, bad luck, time's up. Even my silly sense of humour, that was from monks like Ajahn Mahabua, yes, even from him, and from Ajahn Chah. There was this one, Ajahn Mahabua was one of the strictest, fiercest of monks in Thailand. And
that in his monastery they had the rule, if you didn't make it in time for the morning meeting, if you were even 1 minute late, it meant you could not go on alms round that morning. And if you could not go on alms round that morning, it meant you couldn't eat, which means you had to fast for that day, only one meal a day, and so you had to go without. So there was this one monk, he's a great monk, this Ajahn Sing Tong, his name was. I remember sort of visiting him, and it just shows just, you know, how, like, monks, it's serious, yes, but an enormous sense of humour. And this Ajahn Sing Tong, he woke up late. It does happen. He woke up late and thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to be late and the meeting's already started in the morning. What can I do? Because, you know, surely, sort of, you know, I can't sort of creep into the meeting without being noticed. And that means I'm going to have to fast today. So he said, no, I've got a plan. So I was in these forest monasteries. And he went into that forest monastery, into the monastery, and he searched for a forest chicken, a wild one. And he was, a village boy, so he caught that chicken and he tied a rope around its neck. He didn't kill it, but I don't think the chicken was very happy. And then he dragged the chicken to the hall where they were going to have the meeting. And it was making a lot of noise. And then as soon as he got to the hall, he let the chicken go and he went to sit in the hall. Everyone else was kind of sitting, but they were disturbed, so they looked, what the heck is going on? And then, after the meeting was finished, Ajahn Mahabur was about to tell this monk, no, you came late, no, you can't go on the alms round. And this monk replied, "No, venerable sir, I came before the chicken." And coming before the chicken is like Thai language, and it means, you know, Ma Kong Gai, it means you came so early before the before the cock crow. And all the monks there, they hadn't heard this before, and they all burst out laughing. They couldn't restrain themselves. And even Ajahn Mahabur couldn't restrain himself and laughed and said, "Okay, you can go on arms round. But don't do that again." So, you know, that's sometimes the joy which, you know, you get from, you know, some of these experiences. And anyway, so that was, you know, where I got some of the light-heartedness of great meditators. Make it really, really peaceful and happy and joyful. You can't help yourself. I've noticed that. I think you've seen me a few times. Like in the morning time, you have a really nice meditation. When you come to the hall, you know, to breakfast or lunch or whatever, you're just full of energy, full of beans. And you, some people may think you're stupid. It's not that, it's just gorgeous energy of meditation, just engaging with the world. Anyway, so that's sort of the joy and happiness of meditation. It's not like you have to abandon one thing, get really deep and blissed out, and have to abandon, you know, the other, the natural personalities of having joy and having fun. Make sense? No? Okay, any other questions? No? You want to go? What? You want a cup of tea? Oh, come on, you can have a cup of tea anytime. That's one of the reasons why I became a disciple of Ajahn Chah. When I found there was a monk, oh, come on. Ajahn Chah. Chah, it means tea. It means tea. And this is honest. Of course, I burst out laughing, couldn't help myself. when Ajahn Chah went over to UK, and we asked him, you were in, you know, UK, what, did you learn any English? He said, yeah. No, that's in Thai. He said, no, yeah. What word did you learn? Cup of tea. That was the only word he remembered from being in UK. And also when he went to United States and all these big shots like Jack Kornfield and Joseph Goldstein and all these other people, they were there listening to his talk. One of the things they remarked, they'd had many Burmese teachers, nothing to do with Burma, many of the Burmese teachers, and they said afterwards, he said, it was so wonderful to see you here, this Thai Ajahn Chah, because you were smiling all the time. A lot of times, no criticism, but sometimes Burmese monks never smile. Sometimes you try and tell them a joke and see if they can smile, but it's quite a contest. But he was also so direct. I wasn't there when he said this, but then at the end of his tour, United States, they asked him, he said, what do you think of Buddhism in the United States? And he replied, Buddhism hasn't arrived in the United States yet. That made many of these teachers feel very embarrassed. He was great like that. Okay, anyway. So any questions yet? Okay, I'll take the hint.